What was life like in Monroe before the war?
This Monroe was a beautiful little city. Everything peaceful and quiet, and everybody seemed to get along. And a world of difference as the years went by. And I remember when I graduated in 1941, Europe was at war. Well, we got involved at Pearl Harbor December 7th, 1941. And they had started the draft, and I did not want to get drafted, so I enlisted in the Marine Corps. And I was received my boot training at San Diego. And that was 12 weeks of intense training. No liberty. And by that I mean we couldn't go ashore, we couldn't go out. And after boot camp, I went to North Island, which is Coronado. It's an island right off the coast of California. There for 30 days, I had guard duty. And from leaving North Island, I went to next base. I went to Camp Miramar, which is Southern California. Stayed there training a short period of time. And then from there, I went to Camp Elliott for some more intensive training. And I went to the big camp of Camp Pendleton. And from Camp Pendleton, which I received more training, shot up the coast to El Toro, which is in Santa Ana, California. And from there, I went up to San Francisco and shipped out overseas.
Okay. What was people's reaction in Monroe about the time of the war when people were starting to get drafted?
Well, the people, this was something all new. War was new to the young people like myself, and to the older people. Well, some of them was just getting to work. You know, we was coming out of the Depression, and they was working 7 days a week. Some was holding two jobs. Some was getting all the overtime they wanted. Life took on a new meaning for them. People were having money for the first time in years, and I imagine the mothers and fathers were a little apprehensive about their sons, going into battle. But this was all new for the American people since World War I.
Where were you stationed? Where were you stationed during World War II? Where did you see battle at, and what islands did you see?
Well, like I said, I went over to Pearl Harbor, but the bombing had already taken place during December 7th, 1941. Well, after some more training in Hawaii, I went to Johnson Island for a short time, and from Johnson Island, I went to Midway. Well, the Battle of Midway was over, but that was starting to be the turning point of the war for the Americans, because we defeated the Japanese at Midway. And Midway was composed of two islands, Eastern Island and Sand Island. And after staying in Midway there for, I don't know how many months, I flew back to Hawaii for some more training, and was put into an expeditionary force with the 4th Marines. Well, because we knew and then joined the 5th Fleet, which was the largest fleet in the world at that time. And we shipped out to the Marshalls, and Marshalls were made up of thousands of islands, but the main islands in the Marshalls where the battles were was Roy, Kwajalein, and Namur, and Majuro. And I went ashore on Majuro, which had the largest natural harbor in the world at that time, or probably still does. And after the battle was over, which was a short time, it was, didn't last too many, only about a month was the whole operation, cleaning the Marshalls up. And from there we boarded, and we went up to the Marianas. And the Marianas was composed of numerous of islands, you could hardly tell. But the main ones was Guam, Saipan, and Tinian. And, well, I was at Saipan. And stayed there. Well, this was all through a period of time and battles. And from there, well, I was aboard a hospital ship and went back to Hawaii. And then from Hawaii back to San Diego. And from San Diego, I went to home for a 30-day leave. And that was in the year 1945. Well, in that period of time, 3 years had went by, you know what I'm saying? And when I came back to Manila after being gone for about 3 years, well, I had a dog that was 14 years old, and he hadn't seen me for 3 years. And he went a little wild, and that's, you know how animals are. They're so happy to see you. And, well, from after my 30-day furlough, I went back to U.S. Naval Hospital in Quantico, Virginia, till December of 1945. Well, in the meantime, that's when I got discharged from the Marine Corps. The war was over within officially around August the 6th. When the Japanese surrendered after the United States dropped a couple of A-bombs.
Okay, what was the battles like from like your point of view? Like graphic scenes or
they were horrible. Like the submarine said that there shouldn't be if there was ever a hell, it was right here on Earth. And you have to feel sorry for the ones that were maimed and crippled, and the ones who got killed when they were only 18 and 19 years old, you know, young people, and never had a chance really to experience life.
What about the drill sergeants that you were talking about earlier?
Well, they were mean and rough and dirty back then, but they were brainwashed, and they were told to do those things, and see, they didn't go overseas right with us because you know, people are people, and a lot of them would have got shot right by their own American men because, you know, on account of the duty was so bad and terrible, but they're not allowed to do some of the things today in the Marine Corps like they got by with back in 1940s.
What type of things did they make you do?
Well, like different times, they wake you up maybe 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, and just run you and drill you all night long up and down the hills and extensive hard duty that and without sleep or anything. It's hard to describe unless you go through it yourself, the training and how exhausted you would be.
Do you feel they are just being jerks, or do you think they were preparing you for what maybe the enemy might have done?
Well, that could be it. I think it was that the hard, extensive training, and they were told, and they were drilled before they became drill sergeants, they had to go through that same rigorous training themselves, which a number of Marines died right in that kind of a training, and that the congressmen and senators of some of the men, they changed a lot of that.
What do you remember most about the military service in World War II?
Well, being in the hospital, seeing some of the men that were so mangled, and some that was run over by tanks and trucks and shot all to pieces, and being in the psycho ward, I was in a psycho ward there for a number of months, and well, every day we had to receive treatments and talk to these psychiatrists, and it was really something really odd and strange at that time, because remember at that time there was no television, we didn't know anything about this kind of ordeal that we were going through. And
all right, what was the saddest thing that happened to you during World War II?
Well, see, in a war, you meet so many different people, and you become closer than brothers. And, well, you know, one day you're here, and the next day you're gone. And life is very fast, and you lose so many different comrades, and it is a sad thing to become very good friends with different men, and then the next thing you know, they're dead.
What was the most rewarding thing that happened?
Well, when my life was spared and saved by a fellow marine.
How did he do that?
Well, we was in combat and everything, and I was out on patrol and separated from my platoon, and I was surrounded, and he came in with his BAR and our firepower, and we was able to get back to our main line.
At the time, what do you think you were fighting for? Who was the enemy?
Well, I really didn't hate anybody at that time. Most of the men did. It was something that we was called upon to do. And really, I had never met a Japanese person in my life. And I didn't hate them then. And really, I don't hate them now. Don't hate anybody.
Who was the enemy for you, though, during the war?
Well, Pearl Harbor, the Japanese bombed, and we knew we were at war with the Japanese, and we was also at war with the Germans, too, at that time. And since I was in the Pacific fighting the Japanese, they were my enemies, and we was to fight, for victory, and so I would have to say that they were my enemies, although I had never met any up to that time.
All right. How have your war experiences changed your life?
Well, I think all wars, as far as I'm concerned, were really stupid. Because who is really the winner of a war? If you go back to over the 300 and some odd thousand men that we've lost in World War II, and most of them are young men who never had a chance at life, if they could be brought back to life, they would tell you. What victory? I mean, what is victory?
How strong are your memories of this period compared to other times in your life? How do you explain that?
Well, a war always leaves a scar on anybody. It seems like they say, well, you can block out this and you can block out that out of your mind, which you really can for a certain period of time. But with today, everything wars, that they show these war pictures on television, and they have these war movies, and you go to show and it's war movies. But those movies are very different than the actual thing. The actual thing, when you know that maybe you won't even be alive 5 minutes from now, or 10 minutes or the next day, is a lot different than watching a movie than being in the actual combat.
Okay. How when you were stationed and you were in battle, how did you learn about what other events were taking place in the war?
Well, two letters from home, and our captains and major generals, and that they would brief us on different things that was taking place on other islands and on other fronts.
What's one lesson that that you think I should learn from remembering World War II?
Our wars. Well, same as at World War II. But since World War II, we've been in conflict in Korea and Vietnam, and it seems like there's and also the Gulf. It seems like that human beings do not learn too much from wars, because we keep having one war right after another. And I think that the people are getting a little smarter today, though, to realize that wars are really stupid, that they probably there should be another alternative instead of young men going off to battle.
Okay, you said back in the tape that if there was ever a hell, if there ever was a hell, it was here on Earth during the war. Well, that was like more of your opinion. How did other fellow soldiers react towards battle, and how were their feelings towards the war?
Well, most of the men was glad to get out of that war zone and get back home. And during the war, a lot of people would really be surprised how many men committed suicide. And everybody found out that war is really hell. They build war up, and these are movies and everything that is really glorious and that. But it really isn't. After a little taste of it, you've had enough, and more than enough. And everybody that I know of was glad that the war was over with and that they could go home. Some people made a career out of the service, which is good, when there's no war. But, of course, you will always have them few people that devil may care that probably like war. But to me, and to most people, war is really, very stupid.
Okay. There's always that conception that when you go into battle with another country, you got to have there's honor and all that for your country and prize taking place. Do you feel that some pride and honor was lost after the war, or do you feel that you had a stronger sense of it after the war?
Well, I had a stronger sense. Everybody did. You wake up to that reality that you're human and that you are going to die, but you're going to die of an old age or doing something at home than you would losing your life in battle. There is a sense of pride, naturally. You're fighting for your country. You're fighting for the people in America, and which is honorable. And it's your sense of duty. That's what they made you feel like it's your sense of duty, which it is to be an American, to protect your own country.
Okay, you said you were stationed on some islands. What were the natives and the animals and food like over there?
Well, the natives that I came in contact were born on them islands. They were Polynesians, most of them, and they were very beautiful people, most of the ones that I come in contact with. And well, some islands had snakes and monkeys and a lot of different land animals. And then some islands didn't have no snakes or spiders or anything. And there was, in the Marshalls, a certain time of the year, or every so many years, out of the ocean would come these land crabs. Now, they wouldn't hurt you, but it seemed like billions of them would come up on land, out of the ocean, lay their eggs and stay there a few weeks, and then they go back into the ocean and disappear. They wouldn't hurt you, but they were really hideous looking, and they were, maybe 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and it was something that you'd have to see it really to believe it.
Do you think that for an 18-year-old or 19-year-old that was doing battle in the islands at the time, do you think that it was more overwhelming to see all these creatures or actually do battle? Because from some of those creatures, they're probably pretty hideous.
This is maybe a bad thing to say, but a lot of men were kind of glad to get wounded so that they would leave the war zone and get back in a hospital ship and get back to either Hawaii or back to the United States, and the war would maybe be over for them.
Were many men in your platoon and all that, were they scared of the like snakes, the spiders, the lizards? And
oh, yes. Whenever there'd be a lot of snakes, you'd hear the men howling, snakes, and they'd all be out there to kill the snakes. And there were some bad spiders, too, that which everybody would be killing, Now, there were certain lizards that was really protected that we were told not to kill because they would protect the humans, by eating the different insects and spiders. And
what was life like at night in the jungle?
Well, at night was really the scariest part, especially during the battle, because if you had to go to the bathroom, I tell you, you either went in your clothes or you would slide your pants down laying in a foxhole and use your hand and just take the crap and just throw it and wipe your butt with whatever you had. And a lot of times you'd throw it away and hoping you didn't hit one of your fellow men laying out in some other foxhole.
Okay. You said that you had already graduated from high school when Pearl Harbor was bombed. Where were you working at? How much were you getting paid? And what were people's reactions in Monroe to the Pearl Harbor being bombed?
Well, when Pearl Harbor was bombed on December 7th, 1941, I was working at the Monroe Auto Equipment. And I was making, roughly in a day, about $9.
Okay, you were making $9 a day, but how were people's, you know, memories of this time, and what did they think about it, when Pearl Harbor was bombed?
Well, people were mad, and it was something that they were mad in the way that Pearl Harbor was bombed, and to think that we was in war, but a lot of people were happy in some respect because he was working for the first time, making money. Some people, better than 10 years. You know, a lot of people lost their farms, their homes. And life was tough in some ways, but it was good in other ways too, as far as crime was concerned. And there was a mixed reaction. A lot of people were happy. They were working 7 days a week, all the hours they wanted to work. And some people were making good money at the time. So it's hard to feel what everybody thought. Well, to the young person, war was supposed to be glorious and adventurous, which it was adventurous as far as... I would have never ever got to so many islands and places that I've been if it wasn't for a war. But it's a hell of a price for some people to pay because their life was ended.
Okay, you might not know a lot about this since you were seeing battle, but... During World War One, there was a mixed opinion about immigrants over in this country. Was there any feelings towards the immigrants during this time?
Yes, there were some hard feelings against some of the American people that were of German descent, and also the Japanese. But yet, the vast majority of them people were all really loyal to the Americans. But at that time, people had their own opinions and everything else, and which was... like bias and prejudice, and there's some bigotry going on to a certain extent. But we were all human, and the German-Americans, the vast majority of them, were really Americans. And they fought for this country.
Would you say, due to the war and a lot of men going off, did the economy change for the woman and for like the colored people?
Yes, women were getting jobs in airplane factories, they were getting jobs in shipyards, they were getting jobs all over. And your black people, they brought them up from the south by the truckloads, Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, and your other companies. And people were at work, and America was at work more than any time it has been, than even before World War One.
Okay. When you were on the islands, what types of foods did you eat?
Well, our main foods were sea rations, and that was mostly canned things. But right during the battle, we had, we had field kitchens, and we had K rations. Well, K rations was made up of a little bit of hardtack. There was usually four cigarettes in the package, and there was a little hard meat jerky, and maybe a hard piece of cheese and some hard crackers.
Okay, in what other ways did ordinary people in Monroe support the war effort, if you can remember this?
Well, there was war bond drives. There was victory gardens, which everybody, not everybody, but most people had their own gardens. And there was different war drives in the American Red Cross and the Salvation Army and your various churches would put on a different drive for the war effort.
Okay, you mentioned Victory Gardens. Did anyone in your family have one?
Yes, my mother and father had a Victory Garden, and my grandparents, they had Victory Gardens. And, of course, they died during World War II, my grandparents on both sides, my mother's side and my dad's side.
Okay. Did you have any other family members go over to the war?
Well, I had a lot of relations, and also my brother Earl was in the Army, and he was over in the European Theater, and also in the and after the European Theater, he went to Burma.
Did any time during the war, did you ever come in contact with him, or anything like that, or write letters to him, or?
No, I never contacted with any of my relation, not even my brother, but we kept in contact through letter writing.
Okay. Do you feel that between the Marines, Army, and Navy, and Air Force, do you feel that there was, like, real resentment between each other, that somebody, one of those groups might get a little more glory than the others?
Well, there was a little animosity, but each branch thought they were better than the other branch, except right in battle, because when you're right in battle, everybody's for everybody, and you're glad everybody is there.
Okay, you mentioned that you were in the hospital, like, during some of your stays, after some of the islands you were on. Can you tell us about that?
Well, when I came back to the States and I was in a hospital at U.S. Naval Hospital in Quantico, Virginia, I was in a psycho ward. Well, I guess most servicemen are a little bit nuts anyway, after they come out of combat. And every day we would have to talk to different various psychiatrists, doctors. The treatment was really great, and the food was really terrific back here in the United States. We, every day, probably maybe just like you'd go into a high-priced restaurant, really the food was terrific. And but the questionings and the treatment would get old, just like if you went to a doctor every day for maybe pills and treatment, it would get old in time.
Okay. Did you or any of your fellow soldiers ever get a longing of like homesickness, like when you were in battle, or was it mostly when you were near the States?
Well, you're constantly thinking of home. After the adventure, it wears off. You want this war to end and get back and live your civilian life, because life was really great at that time, being a civilian, it was so peaceful. And being in war, it's a whole new atmosphere. And when you see people getting crippled and maimed and killed, it's not no pleasant sight.
Okay, do you feel that with all the brainwashing that the military did to prepare you for war, if there was an innocent bystander, like a Japanese kid, right in the war zone, and his life was in danger, do you think any of the American soldiers would have jumped in to save him?
Well, yes. I mean, the vast majority of servicemen, I mean, they weren't cruel. They were human, and they were put into a war that they really didn't want. I don't believe anybody really wants war. I mean, after they get a taste of their first battle, and they see what it's like, it's not glorious.
How did the war affect your family life and your personal life?
Well, at the time, you really don't give a darn for nothing, because you don't know if you're going to live from one minute to the next. And you do get a little bit more religious, because you think you are going to meet your maker in a hurry. You're speaking to a person one minute, and maybe 5 minutes later or 10 minutes or the next day, he's gone. And you know it could happen to you very easily. And that's and you're hoping that it don't. And that's why everybody was hoping that they were so happy when the war was over with.
Okay. I heard that you were a pretty good boxer during World War before and during. But you notice how Muhammad Ali, when the war came up, He refused to go to war and he was sentenced to jail for a couple years. Hey, do you think that war had an effect on your boxing career?
I think it did to a certain extent because I had the opportunity. It seemed like when the war was over, you lose a lot of interest and the years go by and you hate to get started all over again with your career and along that field of line.
Who were some of those boxers, if you remember any, that you fought before and during the war?
Well, during the war, I fought some champions of the world, like Mickey Red Cochran at that time was the welterweight champion of the world, which I boxed him. And I also with Billy Seuss, who fought Billy Kahn, the light heavyweight champion of the world at that time, who had also fought Joe Louis and had Joe Louis licked for 12 and a half rounds. I fought some great men. And it's hard for me to remember all the fighters that I did box at that time, but they were some terrific fighters.
Did you beat any of those world champions?
I fought Mickey Red Cochran, and they would not give no decision on it. But deep in my heart, I figured I'd beat him.
What kind of battle did they do, the champions? Was it limited, or since they were, you know, celebrities? And
well, some of your great fighters did see a lot of action. Like Barney Ross, who was a lightweight champion of the world, he was wounded in Guadalcanal. And yes, there was quite a few boxers, and like Billy Seuss and all of them, did see a lot of action. Now, some of your boxers, they had limited action, but they would go from camp to camp and put on exhibition shows, like Joe Louis and some of your others. But there were some great champions that did see a lot of actions and also died.
Did you have any resentment towards the ones that were going around putting on shows like Joe Louis? Because since he wasn't fighting and you were, and you could box and so could he, but because he was world champ, that you didn't get that chance.
Well, no, didn't have no resentment. He was back here in the States going from camp to camp, and I was overseas. And I really didn't follow too much of what they were doing because we didn't know everything that was going on. And I was just glad, just like most of the others, when the war did come to an end.
Okay, on some of those islands that you said you went to, were you prepared, like, with vaccinations and all that for them? And what kind of diseases did fellow soldiers come in contact with?
Well, some of the places we hit, there were different diseases that the American medical didn't even know anything about. We broke out, I remember the first time, all of us, we broke out with boils all over our body. And what we had to do, or what they did for us, was they would paint each boil on us with something like a mercury comb or iodine, and let the sun hit these spots, you know what I mean? And eventually they would disappear, but they would leave loose scar marks, which in time they did disappear, and we didn't even know what it was. But it was just the idea of being on some of these places and where they had these various different diseases, and some people would break out like a leprosy. Their skin would crack and bleed, and their toes, and it was they called it the jungle rot, and which most of us had to get treatment for.
Was jungle rot painful, and did it affect your effort into the war?
Well, yes, there at that time you could hardly walk, and it was very painful when you did, and it was way worse than athlete's foot or anything, you know, and how a bad case of athlete's feet would be. Well, when you had it over your hands and feet and other places on your body, you were in pain.
Were there any diseases that affected, like, the stomach, the head, or anything like that?
Oh, yes, there was, well, everybody heard of diarrhea. Well, we'd get this, what they call dysentery. Well, a lot of people even died of dysentery. It's a stomach ailment, and from food and everything else, and your bowels would just keep moving till the only thing would be passing is blood, and you'd have to be put in a hospital or a sick bay, which is a hospital, and you're in very weak condition for quite a while.
Do you feel that the American press and the government hid the truth from the people back here at home about what was really going, what was really taking place?
Oh yes, the American people, they didn't know everything that was going on. They still don't know everything that goes on in a war. So many things are hidden, and the people are brainwashed. Even the servicemen are brainwashed to a certain extent. We was promised that before the war and during the war, that when the war was over with, that we were going to get the best jobs and we were going to be treated like kings, and that was all a lie.
What about, did they, what did they hide about when it came to somebody's death, either from suicide or from an actual battle?
Well, during a battle or being overseas like that, when somebody would die, whether it was in combat or whether it was by suicide, it was always that they died in the line of duty.
What would they do with the body that died?
Well, overseas, they was just buried where they died. There was no such thing as sending the body back home in those days. And like that'd be one of the, well, the crappy details like a lot of people would get if these burial details, like the Japanese, they would just dig trenches and just cover them up.
Okay, when you would win a battle, what was it like seeing the American flag raised?
Well, it was always terrific and heartwarming, and when everything was over with, because you know you would be leaving that place and going back to where, like maybe Australia or back to Hawaii, which was a rest camp.
Okay, who were some of the performers that performed for the American soldiers?
Oh, back in them times, we had the greatest entertainment in the world that would come over there, Bob Hope and his troops, and there was a lot of people from Hollywood and show people that really put on some great shows for us, and all the men were so great to see these here, because this was getting news and everything right from home, that these kind of shows, people really, the servicemen really enjoyed. It was really building up their morale. Something terrific.
Okay, what was your rank during World War II?
Well, I started off as a private and worked my way up to a sergeant, and then got broke down to a private again, which is really nothing. A lot of people get broke down, and I was always happy. I was happy regardless of what rank I had. It didn't make no difference. Even when I was a private, I was just as happy as anything else, because we all know that the war was coming to an end, and the little difference in pay really didn't mean anything.
Do you feel there was less duty from being a private to a sergeant?
No, I think the privates got the worst detail of all.
Were you ever court-martialed or anything like that?
Yes, I was court-martialed from and broke down to a private because I went to see Bob Hope, and Bob Hope was on another island, and I left my duty, which there was no battle at this time. We was the war had been over, and this was happening in the Marshall Islands, and I went over to the other island, and well, and then they found out about it, so they broke me down to a private, which was no big deal.
Were you ever thrown in the brig?
Oh yes, I was thrown in the brig in the States, in the United States. A few of us Marines went out one night, so we thought we would take a taxi cab for a little joyride. Well, we got picked up by the MPs, and we were thrown in the brig, but this cab company did not want to press charges, so they had to release us.
What were, during boot camp, what were some of the forms of punishment when a soldier would do something wrong?
Well, one form of punishment was that they'd make you sleep with your rifle, which was an M1, and all night long, and that was cold. And some of the other punishments, they would make you take your hands and beat against a cement wall till they were all puffed up and bleeding and cracked. And or they would make you stand at attention and with your rifle doing up and down shoulders till you couldn't even lift no more.
Do you feel that if you were 18 again, at the same time, 1941, and there was no draft this time, would you enlist?
Absolutely not.
And why is this?
Well, with all the drug problems that are going on today, and all the crooked politicians, and what have you, I'd like to see all these congressmen and senators and what have you, and your big shots, put them in the war first. See how they like it. Then, if they can survive and the war is still going on, then put the young people into it.
Do you feel if it's fair to put the young, put a young person into a war when there's a lot of older people that would have more experience and you know, would be more prepared for it?
Well, the first thing I'd say in these different countries, I try to stop a war in the first place by having different discussions at the table and see what our differences are and if they could be ironed out without going into combat. That would be the first thing. And then if there be no solution but war, oh, so be it.
When you first seen battle at your age, do you think you did you just rush in instead of where some of those older soldiers, they laid back a little bit?
Well, like I say, everybody's eager beaver, but you learn real quick. You face reality real quick.
Well, it's been nice interviewing you, and thanks a lot.
You're welcome.